Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I am your host, Corey Fleck, and I appreciate all of you joining us after what was the last full week of trading. We have Christmas coming up on Friday. It's going to be a shortened week for the next 2 weeks, but boy, oh boy, there was a lot that went on this week. And a lot that we need to, I think, take a step back and understand what's happened to these markets in the last, really, just couple months. I'm kicking off this show with Rick Bensignor. He is the president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes his institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors, which is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world, also writes a retail newsletter called In the No Trader, and he did start up a new piece called 7-Eleven, where he picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs. Now, Rick, big picture here. As I mentioned, the last couple months, it seems like everything has moved higher. It doesn't matter what you look at outside of, say, bonds and the dollar. It's been a great environment for investors as long as you have been invested and not simply holding cash, especially the US dollar, because that keeps on moving lower. Before we get into some of the individual market moves, what do you take away from markets like this where clearly everyone's excited or everyone is optimistic? And the fact of the matter is everything's going higher. So why not be confident and optimistic?
Well, Corey, I agree with you that for the most part, everything is going higher, let's say barring the dollar when we look across, you know, the asset classes. Although I guess if we look in bond price terms, they're going lower a bit as rates move up, but rates are going higher in general. But, you know, this is the result of two big things. One was the big sell-off earlier this year, which got many people out. I was actually out for a walk with a neighbor a couple days ago, and he was telling me that he sold a lot out in the big March-April decline and has yet to come back in. And, you know, that to me is probably similar to many people who are individual investors who rightfully got spooked in the spring, but unfortunately, wrongfully didn't get back in. And part of that is, I think, in behavioral finance, we would allude to the anchoring bias that people hate to buy back at a higher price than they sold out. So if they sold out in the depths of the March-April decline, then chances are if they didn't immediately react and get back in, they saw prices being higher than where they sold. So they were waiting to get back to at least the level to where they sold out at to get back in. And the problem was they never got that opportunity. And the more the market went up, the more they get frustrated and just say, well, you know, this is a crazy market. It's going up. And there's no reason for it to go up in this COVID environment. And a lot of that is rational thinking. I think probably investors or even the general public may be more rational about the thinking than the investors who have pushed this market higher. But nonetheless, the market is higher. And I think a lot of individual investors have that really difficult time paying higher than where they sold. So they've missed a lot of this rally. And whether they're first coming back in now, which seems, you know, you look at some of the statistics and there's huge money inflows coming in now. How much of it is pure institutional as compared to retail, I don't know. But so that's certainly one of the big factors. The other thing is that Fed Chairman Powell, again, reiterated this past week that there is whatever tools necessary the Fed has to keep the money spigots open and to keep, you know, the economy liquid as best they can. And certainly investors like that. And it's not really new news from the chairman, but it's reiterated news. And so there just isn't a lot at this point that's newly negative. Anything related to COVID has been around for months, if anything, now that the vaccines are starting to be made available in the U.S., and it's still going to easily take 6 months, I suppose, before the bulk of the population gets vaccinated, for those who choose to take it. But the news, when you look at things in general, the liquidity, a lot of it honestly just goes back to the old don't fight the Fed. When the Fed's going to pump money into the system and continually tells you that they will do that as often as needed to keep the system afloat and healthy, markets, equity markets tend to move higher. And, you know, look, I've picked a few times along this post-spring rally to lighten up on longs and you know, to hedge my portfolio and recommend hedging client portfolios. But the reality is that we end up closing out the hedges generally with, you know, a couple of percent that the markets move higher than where we put the hedges on. And we've lost some opportunity cost for that percent of the portfolio that we've hedged. But by and large, the market moves higher. It keeps moving higher. We hit all-time highs earlier today before the market sold off in most of the key equity indices in the U.S. And I'll allude back to, and I'll probably talk about this more in coming months, but all the way back in 2013 when I was at Wells Fargo as their head of trading strategy, one of the last pieces I wrote for them before I left the firm, it was June of 2013, I think. Maybe 2014, was at, and the S&P was trading at 2,000 at the time. And the headline on the piece was that the S&P will trade 5,000 by the end in 10 years. And we just may do that. You know, we're still only in 2020. We're already in the mid 3,000s. We've only got less than 1,400 points to go. We could easily get there in the next 2 years. And, it's, you know, there's been a lot of up and down movement in between, but the U.S. stock market is a pretty darn hard place to outperform over time if you stay as, you know, an invested investor.
Do you think it's going to stay that way, though, Rick? Because in all fairness, U.S. markets have outperformed broadly a lot of other markets. But over the last year or two, there has been a little maybe catch up by some of these other markets or lack of complete outperformance by the U.S. markets. Do you see any of that changing in terms of outside money, maybe focusing outside the U.S.?
Yeah, it's a good question, Corey. And earlier this year, I think it was over the summer, I suggested people start looking at Germany as a place. And of course, Germany is the powerhouse of the EU economy. And I suggested that Germany could outperform the S&P till year end. And, you know, I think given how much the S&P has pulled up now, I haven't looked at it in the last 2 weeks, but, you know, Germany's held its own. But I'm not sure if it's actually literally outperformed or not. But you know, we are seeing some other major global indices moving higher too, and it's not just in Europe. We're seeing Japan on a breakout too, and China's actually done a pretty good job of bouncing back from where they were off of the March lows. Whether or not, as we go into 2021, I haven't yet put out my my outlook for 2021. And I'll be working on it in the next week and a half. And they, you know, that is one of the things I'll take a look at. So I think there'll likely be some catch up, but you kind of still have the U.S. as the top dog here. And I think something has to change in a big way for that not to be the case. So instead of the spread between U.S. performance and, let's say, European equity performance being so large, it can still slowly come in, but I'm not sure that in a pair trade situation, I want to be long Europe, you know, versus the S&P. I've got to do a little more work on that before, you know, I kind of fill your listeners in on that. That's something next month we can talk about, because at that point I'll have my analysis done.
Okay. Hey, that sounds good. Let's talk about the overall trend, though, recently, which is this reflation or inflation trade. You look across the board, oil is almost at $50 a barrel. Copper continues to break higher. Gold has been popping higher. Bitcoin just broke 23,000. We'll go one by one through these sectors, but your takeaway from this inflation or reflation trade?
Yeah, I think the market, so on the front page of the institutional report each week, the lower third of it is a table that looks at 10 different markets. and they include the U.S. dollar and the U.S. 10-year gold and gold stocks, oil, the CRB index, emerging market stocks, the S&P and NASDAQ, and then some emerging market bonds that are priced in local currencies. And I look at those in kind of where they are in relation to some key technical levels. And I'll use the 9-week midpoint of price, the 26 midpoint week midpoint of price, where they are in relation to their Ichimoku cloud, and kind of come up with a table. And this table is a table that helps me define, depending upon where, if we're above or below these levels and collectively how they look, it gives me a very good clue about upcoming investor thoughts about inflation coming up or deflation coming up. And for 5 or 6 weeks running now, which is the longest stretch we've had in quite some time, it's showing inflationary pressures. And it's been consistent. And we haven't seen that at all since the COVID sell-off we saw in the spring. This is the first time that we've gone, let's say, 5 or 6 weeks in a row with this table indicating upcoming inflationary pressures. And it'll be no different after this week. Basically, you've got equities making highs, you've got commodities bouncing nicely, and obviously oil, you know, oil to me is the big one I just don't get. You know, it's, oil's at $49.10 right now for the February WTI contract. You know, so round numbers, as you say, we're almost at $50 oil. I couldn't even make sense of it at $40 oil. There's no more increased demand now than there was when it was at $40, because you still have very limited driving, very, very limited companies using the, you know, the demand for energy and office buildings. All these things are still quite limited because of COVID, and yet we've just again rallied another 20%. And don't forget that the $40 price in oil just a month ago was up from, you know, single digits back in the spring. So I've completely missed this rally in oil, simply looking at, you know, logically what's going on, and plenty of oil in storage and demand being moderate, and yet the price has just dramatically increased. And I can't quite wrap my head around that, other than sometimes futures markets really become paper markets, meaning that the funds can keep pushing a market in a certain direction. So just to give you an example, let's say at some point after oil having fallen from $50 in the spring all the way down to single digits and comes back up, and maybe whether it was at $25, $30, at some point funds, their models have turned bullish. And there's nothing that oil has done to stop them from being bullish. And the more oil goes up, the more they'll buy more contracts of oil. So the funds are long. They've gotten recently, those that were short in and around 40 that we stayed for months got squeezed out in the last few weeks as oil has dramatically risen. And like I said, this is, you know, I've been a global macro strategist for, dare I say, dozens of years, and I still can't get my head around this one. So luckily, I haven't been short oil. I'll lean short from a trading perspective, but unfortunately, I missed the entire rally.
What do you think has changed in these funds' minds or in these big money managers' minds where, look, interest rates have been low for a while. The Fed, other central banks, they have been easy for quite a while. But all of a sudden now that money, instead of just landing into, say, the equity market or in the high-flying tech stocks, it's starting to land in these commodities broadly.
You know, there's a lot of funds that really have very little interest or care in the commodity space. The commodity space tends to be much more of a niche space. But a standard equity fund, certainly, let's say they're benchmarked to the S&P, they're going to have some exposure to material type stocks. And the material stocks often have some relations, not direct relation, with what the underlying commodity is doing, such that, let's say, if we talk about gold, you know, gold stocks often move in the direction that gold bullion moves. But there's plenty of times they actually move in opposite directions. They happen to be both moving up now because you have a significantly weakening U.S. dollar. and that helps the price of gold. And it's helped if you actually, for your listeners, if you were to pull up a chart of the U.S. dollar index, what on the street, the ticker is DXY, and we often call it Dixie. If you look at a chart of the dollar index, it peaked at 102 in March at the same time stocks bottomed. So people fled into the dollar when stocks were selling off in the spring. Since stocks have done a massive turnaround and moved higher, the U.S. dollar has done a massive turnaround and is trading now near 90 off of a 102 high. And, you know, for the U.S. dollar index, for the benchmark currency of the world, a 12% move down is a rather significant move in a matter of, you know, I don't know, let's just say 7-8 months. So as long as the dollar keeps going down in general, that's good for U.S. equities. It's good for emerging market stocks, and it's good for commodities. So I have our investors long commodities and short the dollar, and we've been that way for months.
Are there any commodities that you prefer, one over the other, that you think has some of the best prospects into next year?
I'm actually getting closer to shorting copper after this huge run. March copper is trading, let's say, 363 or so. I think another, I don't know, 10, 15, what do we got? 363. So something between 370 and 380, I think, is the end of the copper run, at least for now. So I'm probably going to look to short that because I just think at that point it'll be really overdone relative to prior moves and you know, other metrics that I'm looking at. I still like gold. I like silver. Platinum's on a recent breakout. I was early in platinum. I ended up buying it last February, thinking it was on a breakout then, and it ended up being a false breakout, and it cost me some money. But I've gotten back into it, and now platinum has moved up to all time highs, and I think platinum could go. I think platinum's got a shot for, you know, 30% higher this coming year. Because the funds really still haven't jumped on board the platinum move, and it's now over $1,000. It's near $1,040, and I think that's, you know, a market that, not that again, a lot of people in the world look at the price of platinum or trade it, but it is a tradable commodity. It's not nearly as liquid as gold or silver is, and there's even an ETF that's PPLT, Peter Larry Tom. You know, that tracks the price of platinum. That's something that, you know, I think can do decently next year, and possibly even better than gold, just because gold's run up so much. And now you're starting to see the potential, and there's no facts behind this yet, but the potential that cryptos are starting to maybe take some interest from gold buyers away to diversify and go into the crypto space. You know, Bitcoin at $23,000. In the past, I have stayed away from writing about Bitcoin. It's not something I really care about. Last week I mentioned, just because, you know, it was breaking to new highs or playing around new highs near 20,000. I mentioned that, the entire move up from 13,000 to 20,000 had not budged open interest in the futures contracts at all upward. And typically, a good bull market is going to see open interest move in the direction of the major trend. And open interest had been flat, and yet Bitcoin moved up 50%. So I said, look, that means that shorts are covering to prior longs, and that there's no movement in open interest. And it just, you know, and then what happens this week? Bitcoin explodes from 18,000 to 23,000. So there's a lot of craziness going on, and maybe there are funds out there buying Bitcoin instead of buying gold, or at least diversifying and getting some exposure to Bitcoin. It's still a new market. I don't recommend it to people to play. You have to really, to me, you have to understand what you're playing, and I still don't understand Bitcoin, but, you know, for some people it's going to be a market to trade. And if you're going to trade it, you have to be, I'd almost say, as a speculator, even if you buy one Bitcoin for $23,000, you have to fully expect that any time during the life that you own it, it could easily fall 50% or more at any time, and you just have to be prepared for that. So if you don't have the money to lose either 50% or even more percent of that, then you shouldn't buy it. It's really, really, if you have excess risk capital and you're willing to, you know, be a pure speculator. And think about Bitcoin too. You are playing the greater fool theory. You can't tell me what the true value of Bitcoin is. It's not like other commodities that there is a basic need. There are no natural hedgers for Bitcoin. Last week I looked, the open interest for small speculators showed 7 times as many long contracts as short. So if you buy Bitcoin, you are hoping that somebody's a bigger fool than you are to pay higher than your price. Economically, I can't. There is no natural hedger the way a farmer is a hedger for corn, right? They grow corn. They want to hedge their price, so they'll sell futures against their inventory. Nobody has inventory of Bitcoin except for a few people in the world. It's not enough of a business that you can look at, analyze. This is a pure speculative run, and maybe it goes to 50,000 or 100,000. If it does, am I going to be on board? I'm not. And it's just not something I can get my hands around. And I'm okay on that.
I'm glad you took us there because, yeah, it has garnered a lot of attention, rightfully so. Bitcoin has just kept on moving higher. Let's take a step back then and look at the other side. What do you think it would take, or what do the commodity bulls need to be aware of that could happen, that could pull back or draw down a lot of this optimism around commodities as we head into 2021?
I think you'd have to see a shift more than just a small short covering move in the dollar. You'd probably have to get the dollar index back above and stay above 94 from the current roughly 90 level. That would spook a lot of people who are short the dollar. And if the dollar makes that much of a bounce, then you're going to see gold come off. You're going to see all the things that have done well as the dollar fall decline, including, I suspect, U.S. equities, because these really are mirror images charts. So the dollar declining is almost exactly the opposite image of U.S. stocks rallying. And so if the dollar rallies, I don't think stocks will not rally. A dollar rally will put pressure into U.S. equities. So that would be the surprise. What would make that happen? One could be too many shorts in the dollar already, where if you got some good news, something that would be bullish the dollar, you know, you get a big squeeze come. So again, a trading squeeze of 1 full point, even 2 points in the dollar, is not going to make me think that the dollar's done going down. I've long said for months I've had 87.50 as a minimum 2021 target, downside target. And, you know, I didn't know how long it would take us to get down there, so that's why I had it as a minimum downside target in 2021. We've already gotten, you know, beneath 90 this year, so that could easily happen in the first or second quarter of the year. And it doesn't mean the dollar can't fall further than that, but that's my, you know, kind of initial target for this down move. If something materially changes to get the dollar bullish, then you could see the negative impact on the commodity side as well as the U.S. equity side.
Rick, we're going to wrap it up there. Great comments. Very interesting to end this year, too. And again, everything does seem to be going higher. People obviously are very excited about that. I get it. But I do think we need to understand why it's moving higher, and also just make sure we understand what could happen on the other side of things. But either way, moving into 2021, a lot of people are excited, and especially in the resource sector commodities, because those have performed very well as well. Rick, great chatting with you, buddy. I look forward to chatting with you in the new year. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas, a great holiday season, and a Happy New Year.
You too, Corey. Thanks so much. Very best to you and your family.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.